Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
Hello, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Robert Davis, and please accept our apologies, but we will not be taking callers this evening, as this show has been pre-recorded. Bob?
And Dr. Robert Davis is an internationally recognized scientist in his field. He graduated with a PhD in sensory neuroscience from The Ohio State University, and he's served as professor of neuroscience at the State University of New York for over 30 years. Dr. Davis has published over 60 articles in scholarly journals. He's lectured at national and international scientific conferences and was awarded several major research grants from the National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation. And since his retirement, he's co-authored articles in the Journal of Consciousness Studies and the Journal of Scientific Exploration. Dr. Davis has written three books, and the most recent one, which is the one we're going to be talking about tonight, is Unseen Forces, The Integration of Science, Reality, and You. And the Bob's website is bobdavisspeaks.com. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
It's an absolute pleasure to be with you.
So let's start off with the title of your book, Unseen Forces. I mean, because right off the bat, it gets to the heart of why much of the mainstream ignores or dismisses non-physical evidence. You know, if we can't perceive something with our known physical senses, and a lot of us are hardwired to reject the notion that they exist. So is that why we see so much resistance to unseen forces?
Well, in part, you're right. We are dictated by Newtonian physics. This is Western science, materialism. And as you know, just like you said, under that current paradigm, what you see is what you get. This is reality. Information via the sensory systems is what is the nature of reality. And mainstream science, there are exceptions, will not accept anything else as being a reflection of reality. But unseen forces, non-physical types of energy, we are talking about evidence, largely anecdotal, somewhat experimental, that is indicating that indeed there is another realm, that there is indeed another aspect of reality that people claim to pierce through near-death experiences, out-of-body, psychoactive drugs, even meditation, etc. And Western science does not acknowledge it. They don't consider the subjective experience as a manifestation of reality. It can't be quantified, only qualified. But because it can't be, and because these kinds of experiences that we're going to get into, like the NDE and OBE, because it defies logical explanation, they're not going to accept it. It's inconsistent with current scientific principles.
And you mentioned, you know, some of the various phenomena, death by visions, you know, near-death experiences, you know, after-death communications, et cetera. Do you suspect that there's a common denominator that accounts for all of these non-physical phenomena? In other words, is the mechanism the same that enables telepathy, as the same that enables an NDE, for example?
There's no way to know for sure. However, mainstream science is going to say it's the brain. And there may be aspects of brain function or aspects of human potential that we simply do not understand or have discovered that may facilitate these types of experiences that are characteristic of the NDE, OBE, etc. ESP is another aspect of an illogic type of behavior. You know, we don't, the science does not acknowledge ESP, invisible communication, some kind of pathway between individuals. There's more evidence in my mind that firmly validates ESP. If there's anything I could say with certainty, it is just that non-locality is real. That is valid. And there's been over 600 studies with over 6,000 subjects that have demonstrated conclusively, in my mind at least, and many others, that there is an aspect of communication between people that can circumvent space and time. And this may represent what? Consciousness? Is that the underlying foundation that ties all of these experiences together, including ESP, which is what you asked? Is it the brain, or is it an aspect of the mind that is distinctly different than the brain? One or the other, or maybe even both. Maybe the symbiotic relationship between consciousness and the brain gives rise to these kinds of subjective experiences, which are considered, as you know, realer than real, that transforms people in a psycho-spiritual way from that moment forward, that convinces them that there is life after death, that we need to be more sensitive to our planet, ecological condition. We need to be more humane in all respects with respect to interacting with other human beings. And these people generally are transformed in a humane, more in a humane way following these kinds of experiences. Question, of course, is why? Is it a brain facilitated event, or is it something beyond that cannot be accounted for on the basis of brain behavior alone?
I know, and you speak a lot and write a lot about the peak experience, which are these transformative experiences, personal experiences that people have. So I guess the question is, can you truly understand a peak experience without actually experiencing it?
That's a trick. It's like trying to understand what love is before you fall in love. You can't truly. You could maybe get a sense of it on a superficial level. But when we talk about a peak experience, we're saying what? We're talking about a spiritual, a mystical, a type of extraordinary experience. And we know that's been reported throughout human history across cultures. And it's a real life experience. And it feels real to those who have it. And people say they have this interconnectedness or oneness with the universe. Time and space is altered in varying ways. They gain insight and wisdom. They feel as if their consciousness is separating from their body. They report to engage in telepathic communication when they interact with other beings through, again, NDEs, often in the form of deceased relatives, DMT, or dimethyltryptamine, a psychoactive drug. People claim to have interacted with other beings via that, as well as the unidentified aerial phenomenon, believe it or not. The point is, a peak experience covers a wide range of specific experiences that seem to share similarities in terms of the types of experience that person has during that peak experience, how they are transformed behaviorally, psychospiritually. And the question is there, yes, indeed, a unifying kind of foundation to these distinctly dissimilar events that gives rise to the similarities incurred from those who have it. And right now, we can't say with any certainty what that is, but it's easy to guess and come up with the answer of consciousness being the primary component foundation for this all.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we have our feet in both worlds, so to speak. I know that we're interested in interacting with the spiritual community and also with the science community. And the spiritual community often refers to one's soul, whereas the scientific community refers to terms like consciousness or mind. Are we all talking about the same thing, just using different terms?
Yes, I firmly believe that to be the case. We can use the terms like consciousness, soul, I, spirit, in my mind at least, as being synonymous and interchangeable with one another. And that's part of the problem that we deal with in this realm. There are so many terms that we use, like NDE and OBE, et cetera, and we don't have very specific criteria for what we are talking about. Now, Grayson developed those criteria for the NDE, but more needs to be done when we talk about other types of phenomena that that involve consciousness or the piercing of a veil of another reality. That's part of the problem. So not only do we need to study this further, that goes without saying, but it also requires that we better define many of the terms that we are addressing, like consciousness. What is consciousness? And all I can say about consciousness is that thousands of papers have been written over the centuries, and we still don't have a clear, definitive agreement that's uniform in nature among scholars of today in terms of what consciousness is. It's still an issue of debate.
We're going to go to a break. I just wanted to. You made me think as you were explaining this, is that when we refer to these peak or transformative experiences, it's why it's so important now for people to learn all that they can about such concepts and such things, so that if they come across a peak experience, they don't summarily dismiss it because they can't relate to it. They're so close-minded to the possibility that when it happens, they just file it away, you know. So I think that possibly learning about the science and learning about all of these different phenomena opens one up to personal experiences. But we'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few with Dr. Robert Davis, author of Unseen Forces, The Integration of Science, Reality, and You.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's CAMLAK.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perissetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing. and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dr. Robert Davis. Our sponsor tonight is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Robert Davis, the book Unseen Forces. And again, Dr. Davis's website is bobdavisspeaks.com. Bob, do you think that we all have the innate ability to perceive unseen forces, and it's just that perhaps we've been taught to ignore such thoughts or experiences, but yet we're hardwired to have them?
I think that is true, and I think that also extends into the realm of ESP. We simply do not cultivate these aspects of behavior that some people are clearly able to demonstrate in terms of affecting physical systems at a distance, medical healing, interacting with non-human entities, as they claim. I think we do not understand the essence of these phenomena enough so that we can acknowledge it and try to develop it. It's like the shamans. They claim to go into meditative trance states and achieve dual awareness where they can separate their consciousness from their body. So they claim, and they contend to have a clear understanding of the near-death experience, interaction with non-human entities, the whole bit. And they're not moved by it. To them, it's routine. It's normal. But when someone here has it for the first time, of course, it's a profound dramatic incident that's going to make one's coffee and bagel the next morning to be a very different experience as a result. Now, that person's world is going to be shaken upside down if they come to the realization that they're not their body, that they interacted with the deceased, that they engage in non-local communication, that they came up with these profound insights and understanding of themselves and reality like they've never had before. As clear to them, it's as clear to them as the back of their hand. How can they be different from that moment going forward? They're not. And the question, of course, is why? And unfortunately, we do not recognize this as being fact. except for those that experience it. They know it is real. And that's all that matters, maybe. But it'd be nice, of course, to see if the scientific community and medical community can jump on board to accept it, to endorse it, and to try to cultivate this in the very young, to try to maximize human potential that might have positive outcomes in terms of one's self-healing, controlling their body better. There are many kinds of implications for this that we can only surmise at the present time. And we're still in the evolutionary infancy of this whole thing. We're just trying to figure out what these phenomena are all about, what unseen forces are, what they represent, what is, in other words, ultimate reality. And the overarching question is, are you the brain? That, I think, is essentially the issue at hand, because if we are to believe that people are reporting to interact with alternate realities and entities on that other side, including deceased relatives, then what? Then an aspect of consciousness must be distinctly different than the brain. The survival hypothesis, in other words, must be real. Consciousness or the mind and the brain must be two distinct, independent entities, but they do exist in a symbiotic way when it is housed in a body. Now, what unseen force is in it? Is it? Maybe consciousness is an unseen force, but I do believe that at some point in time, consciousness, whatever that may be, will be validated. It will be proven as a distinctly different entity than the brain. And once found, will actually be part of the unified field theory, Einstein's unified field theory, to coexist with the gravitational, electromagnetic, and the nuclear forces. This kind of unseen force is what governs, I think, reality. In other words, brain is an emergent property of consciousness, not the other way around.
Yeah, and I relate to the theory, the theories presented by William James and Myers, where the brain acts as a filter or a reducing valve, so it helps us make sense of all these unseen forces and navigate our physical lives. But as you point out, it's a different than the brain being the generator of the signal. The brain may facilitate it. People always make that analogy with a radio, when the radio breaks, but the signal, still exists. People today we're brain mapping to try to identify areas of the brain that produce these transcendent experiences. But, maybe we're barking up the wrong tree. I mean, maybe when these transcendent phenomena occur, it's because we're bypassing the brain. It's not going through the brain. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a distinct possibility. And in fact, you can make the case when you mention the mind-brain filter. James came up with that over 100 years ago. But it seems that the evidence that we're coming across just today is reinforcing his mind-brain filter, such that the brain, in fact, may filter out this the true expanded consciousness of true reality. The brain, in other words, impedes our ability to perceive true reality because it evolved on this planet, the brain. Therefore, it's capable of interpreting, responding to, making sense out of only 3D stuff, sensory information. It's capable and designed to do just that. It's a 3D system, and it works beautifully in that capacity, but it might very well limit or impede our ability to perceive other aspects of reality that are non-sensory system in nature. And we see this through, here again, that the ESP, experimental evidence, which has been, again, repeatedly shown to be valid in my mind. We see this in anecdotal reports by people in so many complex, varying ways. Millions of people report to every year to experience this alternate reality. So is it maybe when the brain is at rest, and we see some evidence of this in the literature, when the brain is minimally functioning, like in an NDE, like in a meditative state, like in a type of psychoactive drug-induced effect, the brain actually is functioning not on all cylinders, but quieted to a significant degree. And maybe it has to achieve that so-called default mode network in order for then what? For the brain to stop exerting its influence, not completely, but to a large extent. And once that happens, then maybe we are capable of experiencing true reality that's non-sensory in nature.
Right. I guess that's one of the reasons why so many people have dream visitations, you know, when their so-called monkey mind is at rest and there's a channel presents itself, information seems to flow. You know, you mentioned DMT before, and I remember one of the things that struck me in a significant way from reading Rick Strassman's book and speaking with him was that, you know, the DMT is a naturally occurring substance that appears not only in humans but most all living things, you know, plants and animals and so forth. So, you know, which raises the question of why. I mean, why would a human being, for example, have this hallucinogenic material in our bodies, you know, for what purpose? You know, we know everything has a purpose. I mean, our bodies are magnificent in that respect. So, you know, and maybe the reality is that this is one way we were designed to gain access to these unseen forces and unseen realms, that, you know, these substances get activated, whether they be through in the human brain or through plant consciousness or other things. What are your thoughts on that?
That's an interesting theory. In fact, there was a paper just published this month, and I can't recall the journal, claiming that DMT is indeed found in very small quantities in blood plasma in humans. We know it's in all animals, all living things, except, as you mentioned, except fungi. And what is the purpose of dimethyltryptamine? There's no clear consensus. It's speculated that it's produced in the pineal gland, the central aspect of the brain, deep in the recesses of the brainstem. But what is it? Yeah, it could this give could serve as a medium of some type to facilitate interactions with unseen forces? And could it account for ESP and other types of phenomena? We don't know. Maybe it's interacted with consciousness in some way because it's an hallucinogenic chemical. And people feel that when they have an excess of DMT, they feel as if they're transcending their own body and entering another realm. They hear things, they see things that they shouldn't hear or see otherwise. And they again see these visual patterns and other types of beings. We can only guess as to what the role of DMT may be. One idea is that it may serve as a mechanism, a subservient mechanism by which when we die, it kicks in and kind of serves as a reflex mode which makes death less fearful, allows us to deal with the death transition much more easier with more, less fear, let's put it that way. Could that possibly account for the NDE? I don't think so, but some people would say that.
Your earlier book was on afterlife evidence, and which is, of course, related to unseen forces. But so what I wanted to ask you is, after all of your research into these disciplines of study and the anecdotal, you know, accounts, have you reached any conclusion as to what you think offers the most significant evidence for the survival hypothesis, you know, that the evidence for life after death? Is there one part, one discipline of research over another that you think is most profound?
Yeah. I think Peek and Darien cases, the evidence of discarnate spirits, it's like an NDE. Many people don't know it by that term, Peek and Darien case, D-A-R-I-E-N cases. And we know that some people who are on their deathbed, they act surprised by seeing deceased people. And people who have terminal lucidity or nearing death, more so than not, based on evidence from hospice workers and physicians of the dying, it's uncommon for individuals not to interact or acknowledge deceased relatives. But the Peek and Darien cases is an experience in which an individual either having an NDE or an after-death communication, or what I just referred to, which is a deathbed vision of a deceased person, not known, however, at the time by the experience to be dead, but then they later, that person's later identified either in a photo or information presented from another person that the person did indeed die, but they were unaware of it. I think Ibn Alexander had that experience. So during his NDE, he interacted with a woman, only later to find out after his NDE that she was indeed his sister who had died shortly after birth and whom he never met, nor did he ever know he had. He never knew about it until he found out later on. And he said, that's the person I interacted with during my NDE. It is this nuance of the NDE. The Peek and Darien adds another layer of validity to it. So they're surprised.
Right.
And it's not very frequent, but frequent enough to reinforce the notion that these NDEs are valid.
Yeah, and you mentioned these deathbed visions, and to me that is the most intriguing and the most evidential, not only from all of the studies that I've read, but from personal experience. I mean, in family situations, it's commonplace, where people that are nearing death are visited, and it's so obvious because they're calling out to the people, they're reaching for them, there's somebody else in the room that's unseen to most of the visitors. But it has huge spiritual implications as well, because then we consider the fact that we may all have assistance, you know, when we physically die. So it's not only evidential in terms of survival, but it's comforting on a spiritual level.
It's extraordinarily comforting to the family members and obviously the person involved. And that, again, that's what matters most of all. It's not necessarily important that it be actually a valid experience, which it likely is, but it's not important to prove it. What's important is that it is comforting. The essence of the experience itself to those concerned is what is most significant. And in their minds, it is real. And it very likely is. So it's after-death communication. It's not uncommon. It comes in many forms. It can be visual, it can be auditory. And you had her hospice worker and researcher, Archangel. I forget her first name. You interviewed her a while back, and she said she'd never sat with a dying patient who was not in the presence of an apparition.
That's right.
And many of them, claim to hear the loved one say, "Yes, dear, I'm coming," or "I'm coming," and then a few seconds later they die immediately afterwards. So this happens much more often than not. And of course, Western science, as you know, is going to claim it's an outcome of a dying, chaotic neurobiologic brain that's gone amok. Well, yeah, it's easy to say that. But not one theory, and there have been hundreds of theories proposed by Western science that has been proven to be valid. So you can't prove it, you can't disprove it. But that's why we need, again, to move away from realism to the new paradigm of idealism, where the essence of one's subjective experience should be considered as a reflection of true reality, but it's not. It goes to what we said earlier, because if it is incorporated as an aspect of reality, then we can better understand why the person is transformed. I mean, what is reality other than a person experiencing something that they consider real to be a profound event that they consider beyond the most important thing that ever occurred in their life, and to also be changed in many psycho-spiritual ways from that experience. Now, for all that, how can that not be an aspect of reality? Why is that experience ignored by science, even though it has all of those significant outcomes for the person who experiences it? To me, that is reality,
and you can't get a more powerful experience than that. Somebody, as you mentioned, completely changing their life based upon this experience that they describe as realer than real. So, how can one argue about that? We have been talking with Dr. Robert Davis. The book "Unseen Forces: The Integration of Science, Reality, and You." We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to go to a short break, and we'll be back in a few. Stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love Knows No Death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Dr. Robert Davis. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for the latest events and happenings. And coming up free this coming month of September for our members, on September 3rd from 6:45 p.m. to 8:45 p.m., the Cold Spring Harbor, New York Afterlife Discussion Group meets at the Cold Spring Harbor Library and Environmental Center. On September 14th from 1 to 3 p.m., the Miami, Florida Afterlife Discussion Group meets at the Dade Regional Library in Miami. And it also on September 14th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, that would also be 11 to noon Pacific, our Visionary Explorers Group meets online. The annual Winter Grief Retreat, Love Knows No Death, will be up on our website for super early bird registration shortly. Mark your calendars for January 10th through 12th, 2020 in Fort Myers, Florida. September 25th at 9 p.m. Eastern, we have Merchants of Life, of Light, Merchants of Light, that will be presented by Dr. Betty Kovach. In this enlightening webinar, she will discuss the return of shamanic, mystic, scientific consciousness and how it is changing our world at this much-needed time. Mark your calendar for Wednesday night, September 25th from 9 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time to tune in via your device for this special presentation that will include Dr. Kovach fielding questions directly from our attendees. And for our listeners tonight, we have a limited number of free member-only seats using the code COMLOCK2019 and half-price non-member seats with the code Kovach 2019, and Kovach is spelled K-O-V-A-C-S, 2019. Our Holidays Past Raffle 2019, where you can win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Janet Nohavik, Joanne Gerber, Ginger Quinlan, Dustin Livers, and Bobby Allison, is up and running on our website. So enter early and enter often. One chance is only $5. And surely you would love to help our work continue with a simple $5 raffle ticket and a chance to win. And please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Wow.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Robert Davis and the book Unseen Forces, The Integration of Science, Reality, and You. Bob, I wanted to ask you, what role, if any, do emotions play in non-physical communication? In other words, if emotions are stronger, do they better facilitate such communication?
It's hard to answer that. That's a very good question. The first thing that comes to mind, Bob, is that many people in extraordinarily stressful situations, you know where I'm going with this, as if they're in a life-death crisis, or they're on their emotional crisis. They could be on their last, bottle of booze, and they're praying to God for guidance. At wit's end, some of these people seem to be more prone to having a type of near-death experience or seeing a being of light, or as some people describe as a supreme religious figure. Many people say they see Christ or Buddha based on their cultural background, religious affinities. So maybe the stress when acute could facilitate some of these types of phenomena. Again, is it an aspect of mind that is helping the individual, or is it an aspect of the brain, again going back to that fundamental question, that is kicking in and helping to provide some meaning and comfort to the individual who's in desperate need of an answer or help in some way? That's an often neglected, Bob. That's an often neglected issue. You would think there would be an aspect of psychology involved here. There likely is. Many people who are like fantasy prone or have certain other aspects of personality seem to be a little bit more sensitive to the topic of paranormal, issues. That doesn't necessarily mean that promotes it. But nevertheless, I wish I had a better answer for you, Bob. But that is something that certainly does need to be explored.
Yeah, there does seem to be some evidence from, telepathy studies and Radin's work with presentiment and so forth, that the strong emotional state results in a higher accuracy of when they do these studies about sending and receiving signals. So that's possible. And also, when we talk about spirit communication, when there is a strong emotional tie, which is usually love, that seems to result in a better connection, for that lack of a better term, with the discarnate. So that's possible, that emotions, can play a role. You know what I wanted to mention, because we kind of touched on it before, but we find that there are so many people that contact us in a kind of a frenzied state because they have some sort of peak experience or some sort of after-death communication, and that is troubling to them, and they start questioning their own sanity, and which results in many cases of them seeking professional help. I mean, in some cases, of course, people are have some sort of mental illness, but it seems that in a large number of cases, people are misdiagnosed by traditional treatments and prescribed medication. And I wonder how much our medical community would benefit by having a basic knowledge of some of these things that we've been talking about tonight.
I can't agree more, Bob. This is a an area that is so deserving of course, more research interest, but obviously there's an obvious and critical need for the medical community, psychologists in particular, psychiatrists, to better understand the essence of the peak experience, because one questions whether it falls to the area of a psychopathology or into the area of in spiritual awakening, enhanced mental health. But there are similarities and differences between psychotic episodes and that what we'll call a transcendent experience or peak experience. And generally, and very quickly, if a person is having a PE, but it's truly psychotic, that person is not going to experience the types of emotions that a true peak experience is going to have, in the form of a joy, a serenity, feelings of unconditional love, improvements in psychological health and awareness of life, becoming more spiritual, less materialistic, all the stuff that we hear about. A psychotic individual is going to become more isolated in society, being able to function much poorer. That's a clear, distinct kind of difference between the psychotic and the peak experiencer. So that's critical, because a person who has a peak experience is asking themselves, am I going insane? And the last thing they want to hear is that you might be going insane. They're afraid to go to see a counselor, psychologist, for fear of being labeled just that. They don't know why they're feeling this different way. They have an altered state of consciousness. They feel different today than yesterday because of their NDE, etc. And they don't understand it. They're in tremendous need of guidance, especially by a professional of in the area of psychology, and hopefully who understands the issue at hand here, and hopefully who has had a peak experience, who can talk from keen insight to provide the proper guidance to the individual. Now, I know you know Stanislav Grof, who wrote the book Spiritual Emergency, which is a typical immediate reaction to a peak experience. Am I going crazy? Am I going insane? What does it mean? Why me? All the obvious questions that are asked, and that promotes anxiety and disillusion. So the person is not the same. Initially, it does have a deleterious effect on the person's functioning, but over time, it's integrated. And over time, with the proper counseling and support from family members, that person should benefit. At least that's what some of the tentative data is telling us, that the experience itself was positive. But more down the road, after you get over the humps and you integrate it. And you know this, there's a major burning need for the professional community to better understand what's going on here.
Yeah, we couldn't agree more, and I know that it's one of the things, you know, in addition to our role of trying to educate the public about these all of these non-physical phenomena, we want to be able to have a referral source for the public for mental health professionals who have a basic knowledge and understanding of the things that we're talking about. So when somebody comes into them that had a near-death experience or had a peak experience, they know how to assess and treat the person and incorporate these things into their protocols. A tremendous need for it. But other than that, I mean, even on a regular, normal, everyday level of discussion, people need to open up about these personal experiences that they have, that they've had, you know, to their friends and family, maybe acquaintances or colleagues or whatever. And we have to kind of emerge from the closet on these things. You know, we when we host these discussion groups, we see sometimes people come and they'll sit there for the first couple of meetings and they won't say a word. And then by the, you know, maybe the fourth meeting, all of a sudden they open up and join the discussion and start, you know, telling you stories that will knock your socks off. And you say, well, yeah. why didn't you, you know, mention this before? Well, because they had to feel that they were in a safe, nurturing environment where, as you mentioned, like nobody's going to label or judge them. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we got to that stage in our evolution where this was a common practice and knowledge and not something to be afraid of.
And not in our lifetime, if I may say, but look, I can relate to exactly what you're saying. Back in 2012, my wife and I saw two orange orbs in the night sky in Sedona, Arizona. I call it a UFO. Who knows what it was, but that led me to write my first book, The UFO Phenomena, Should I Believe? And I've never really mentioned this to the public. Then I had a shared death experience 2 years later. I felt an intense, uncomfortable sensation of suffocating. It was horrendous. I couldn't breathe, gasping for breath. I was in a sleep. It was a lucid dream. I never had one before or after. And I felt, once I woke up, obviously the fearful incident caused me to wake up. I woke up. And I knew my dear friend Anne had passed away. I knew it. And guess what? Of course, later that morning, I found out she did, in fact, pass away at around the same time that I had that lucid dream. That led me to write that second book, Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence. And then I had a Kundalini experience. I won't go into detail about that. But that led a type of peak experience. That led me to write this recent book, Unseen Forces. Yeah, The Unseen Forces, the Integration of Science, Reality, and You. So, I was very sensitive to revealing these so-called secrets, these personal details of mine. Why? I'm not sure. Maybe it has to do with the fact that I was working in academia for so long and didn't want to come out of the closet, so to speak, in that regard. But I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Well, it also I think is more interesting to the reader when you have an academic or a scholar writing from the perspective of science, but mixed in with personal experience, you know. So it's more believable and makes the story so much better. So, I mean, I think you made a good move by integrating that in your work. Don't you find it odd? I know when we first started getting into this work, and I would read surveys that they did among the scientific community asking how many scientists, you know, believed in God. And I always thought that the percentage I anticipated the results would show a very low percentage of people. But in reality, the surveys that I read showed a very high percentage of scientists believe in God. So when you think about that, so here they're lecturing us how we should dismiss anything that's not replicable in a lab and you can't perceive with your senses. And on the other hand, they overwhelmingly believe in an unseen force or a God. It's somewhat hypocritical, don't you think?
I know. That's the ultimate paradox. They worship a supreme being over the weekend and then denounce the peak experiencer on a Monday. You know, you go figure that out. Exactly.
I know. Well, we have been talking with Dr. Robert Davis. The book is called Unseen Forces, The Integration of Science, Reality, and You. And there is an Amazon link on our website to that. The website is Robert Davis Speaks. It's BobDavisSpeaks.com. Thank you, friend, for correcting me. And he gets into, we just touched the surface, and things that we talked about, terminal lucidity, torsion, energy, consciousness, the role of the brain. So if you want to learn a lot more, Unseen Forces is the book. Robert, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We hope to speak with you again.
Well, it's a pleasure. I look forward to that occasion. And I want to thank you and members of your organization who do such a critical job helping individuals in need And that's where you're coming from the heart, helping people who are desperate for answers. And you provide such important types of support for them, not only doing this kind of radio show and educating the masses in that regard. And that's fantastic. But again, trying to provide proper resources, counseling services to those in need, among other types of support mechanisms that you have on your website, etc., and the forums, discussion groups that you go at, that you have throughout the country, that is to be commended, much more so than my book, that's for sure. So thank you.
We appreciate the kind words. Thanks so much.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.